This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm joined not in the studio, but somewhere else by Arif Roos, the man with the news. He's over there somewhere. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, Richard.
And of course, Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, Richard. Hello, Arif. And hello, listeners.
As usual, a show in two parts. We've got news bites and some other stuff at the beginning, followed by a used car buying guide of the Alfa Romeo 159, all coming up a little bit later in the show. But before that, of course, we've got some news bites, and it's quick fire news. Pew-pew, isn't it? I don't know why I did that, but I thought I'd just add that, you know?
Yes, it is. It's a nice touch, Richard.
Thank you.
We've got a bunch of small news, small big news. The first of which is the fact that the government has finally approved the heavier drink driving penalties, which means 15 years maximum jail time and 100,000 ringgit fine maximum as well. All very good, but as we mentioned last week, they do have to spend a bit more money on buying these breathalyzer devices because there's just about 38 or 40 of them right now.
Are you kidding me? In the entire of Malaysia?
In the entire of Malaysia, yes.
I think they probably have 38 breathalyzers in my town.
Yeah. That's the main issue.
Are you talking about Bangsa? You just said your town. You live in Bangsa.
My town back home, I should say.
Oh, back home. Okay.
Yes.
So the next piece of news is that, remember back then when the Ministry of Transport said that there will be no more discounts on summons? But because we have a new Minister of Transport and a new government, there is going to be a 70% discount on summons, even blacklisted offences, from the period of 1st August until 31st August. So yeah, now's the best time to pay all of your summons, I guess.
Get it out of the way, yeah.
Yeah. The next piece of news that came out from the government is that literally today, they mentioned that they are cancelling the Targeted Fuel Subsidy Program, also known as the PSP. Mm. One of the main reasons they mentioned was that there's going to be a price difference between the West and East Malaysia. I'm not too sure about that. I'm not sure about how different it's going to be, but they did say that this PSP was only going to come into effect only in Peninsula Malaysia, which was a problem because, you know, some people might not enjoy the subsidies in Sabah and Sarawak. Mm. I'm not sure how different the prices are going to be. Do you know, Daniel?
Actually, I'm sorry, I don't know about this. And, you know, there's been no credible news to confirm what is actually going on.
No word on replacement as well. But on a lot of the news websites, it's all just saying more to come as we've been talking about this. Right.
Excise duties. Give me some of that juicy stuff.
So the other one that the previous government introduced, excise duties, you know, the new regulations, the one that's causing all the delays to the car pricing, the one that we've mentioned that, you know, to plug all the leakages in all the CKD car prices, and the fact that it was going to be re-reviewed, and the fact that it might raise the car prices of locally made cars slightly higher, that's going to be cancelled. No other news about what they're going to do with it, but apparently an outcome will come soon.
Any updates, Daniel? Do you know anything on that?
Well, it's all still hush, very hush-hush, but I think I'd rather not comment because we're not sure about what's going on.
Mm. Yep, as usual.
He does this a lot, you know.
Yeah.
There's been talk then, again, about the third national car.
Ah, yes, that I know.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
Go ahead, Daniel.
Well, that's definitely coming, whether we like it or not. But whether it'll be self-funded or whether it's going to be backed by the government at some point, it's very, very iffy. And if you ask me honestly, I think end of the day, they're going to get some grant from the government. They're going to work it out into a technology grant or some, you know, development grant or some kind of grant to make sure that the government pays for this. Because there is no, honestly, there is no company out there that can actually take this project on without getting money from the government. Because look, car companies globally are suffering. By the time this car gets off the ground, all the established car brands will be back on their feet. And do you think anyone will want to get into a third national car program again? I mean, we already know what happened with Proton. You know, they've gone to Geely. Perdua is basically owned by Toyota and Daihatsu. So third national car, Perdua and Daihatsu, is it going to be another Toyota?
That was the big, huge questions that we had a long time ago. And as I remember when we were talking about this at length, Daniel mentioned that this third national car was going to be powered by Daihatsu and Perodua parts. And basically, the special functions minister, Mr. Azmin Ali, said that he confirmed that the Perodua and Daihatsu will be involved in this, and they will be setting up the whole vendors and the workforce and the supply chains and the whole technology thing. So the third national car, it appears, will only be developed by Dream Edge to a certain extent. They will only design it, and pretty much to that extent, all of the technology will probably come from Perodua and Daihatsu.
Okay, MAA, the press conference, what was that about?
This is interesting.
Yep. So what was it, last week or this week? Sometime this week, Daniel?
No, it last was last week.
The what is it called? The Malaysian Automotive Association held a press conference, revealed some numbers, and some of these numbers were quite staggering, especially, you know, we've been in the COVID period and the pandemic's affected all of these car sales. And I believe Daniel has some numbers about its effects on our car industry.
Yeah. First of all, the numbers are not very good at all. You know, we're just at 175,000 total sales for 2020, which is not surprising at all. In fact, 175,000, if you ask me, it's still pretty good. And a majority came from Proton and Perodua. Some came from the Japanese brands. The high-end luxury brands, of course, are selling, but the numbers are too small to really think about it. They are saying that they can sell another 290,000 cars in the next 5 months. I doubt it. Again, used car dealers will only take in a used car if you're trading in your car at a very low price. And sometimes it's not worthy to throw your car at a low price, even though you got a sales tax discount. Number two, banks are not very eager to give out car loans unless you've got a strong employment record or your own business is very strong. I know for a fact some banks have already issued an internal document saying people in certain industries are not given a car loan or a housing loan. And we know those industries, those are the industries that are worst affected by COVID-19. So if you put all that together, 290,000 ain't going to happen. And last year, other agencies made grand plans of, you know, we're going to sell 600,000 cars and our numbers are going up and all that. Now they're all keeping quiet because this is not a time to boast about car production, even though it affects a lot of jobs and affects a lot of people in Malaysia. We have to be very, very fair about this. The other thing which the MAA president, Dato' Aisha Ahmad, said, that the used car market is booming. Now, I don't mean to disrespect her statement, but when she said booming, I think she meant only the cars below 20,000 ringgit, not the rest, because there are a lot of used car dealers that are closing shop, a lot of used car dealers that are stagnant. But those who are selling cars for cash, old Protons, old Perduas, old Nissans, 15,000, 16,000, 18,000, these are the cars that are sort of booming now because they are cash purchase. So imagine now you wanted to go and buy a car for your teenage child who needs to go to college, or you need to get a second car because your first car is giving a lot of problems, or you know your wife says a 30-year-old car is giving problems and she tries to trade it in and she can't get a good trade-in price. So what do? You go and buy a car for cash, which is in reasonably good condition.
Right.
Because before you were planning to buy, say, a brand new Perodua and now you can't get loan. So you go and buy a second-hand Perodua for 15,000 ringgit. It may be a bit old, but we know the car will still keep running. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is exactly what's happening in one sector of the used car market. But if you go to all these big used car warehouses along, you know, Segambut and Jalan Cheras and Gomba, even in some parts of PJ, you'll notice that a lot of them are sitting there with salesmen, you know, holding their hands out and saying, boss, boss, come, come, come. I got good deal, good deal. The stocks are just sitting there.
Yeah.
And these are cars 50, 60, 70, 80, 100, 100, 200,000. They're just not moving as fast as they should be. And if you go to Facebook Marketplace and you look at the number of cars on sale by individuals, it's shocking. Because why? These cars are collector cars. These are cars owned by people who have put so much passion and pride into their cars. Why are they selling it? They need cash.
Mm. Just going on the figures that you mentioned just now, 175,000 cars sold in what, 6-7 months already? But that actually represents a 40% drop in sales compared to last year. Yes. And because of this, they've revised the forecast of 2020 sales from 400,000 cars to 470,000 cars, because they're predicting 290,000 cars to be sold in just the remaining of what is 4 months now?
Where are people going to get their money from, though? You know,
exactly.
I don't know. Are they expecting like their stocks to mature, their houses to sell, their handbags to, you know, to be sold? I don't know.
And the thing is, you see, nobody's getting a new job. People are still losing their jobs.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense that car sales are going to go up. And even though people are afraid to take public transport and everything else because of spreading the disease and all that, but they're not afraid to go into a big gathering outside the courtyard.
Well, this is true. This is true.
Very true. Yes.
I think the public transport issue is not a big issue.
I mean, let's face it, they used plenty of public transport to get those people there, didn't they?
Yes.
Well, private transport. We should probably move along, shouldn't we?
We should.
That was such a smooth transition, by the way, guys. Yes. Well done.
Yes.
So in the same press conference, a certain Mr. Daniel Fernandez also pointed a few questions to the MAA president, Dato' Aisha Ahmad, with regards to our car prices. And she said, I quote, "We definitely agree that there should be a level playing field and that every car company should be paying duties on the same level." And, you know, we've been complaining about this for years.
Yes.
And apparently the MAA has also been complaining to the government about this, but it always falls on deaf ears.
Right.
She maintains as well that, especially when it comes to the national car, the third national car, she seems to be very steadfast, very sure about her opinions about a lot of things. And she says that two national cars is already too many for this nation. It's a political decision, these national cars. And three, ... quote unquote, no comment. So that's the way it stands. I mean, it's a very tricky situation. And we've mentioned this a number of times in the show about the car prices here. And literally, there is not much room we can maneuver in terms of reducing car prices, especially when the tax and duties collected on these cars amount to at least 9.5 billion ringgit. So for our car prices to come down, we need to find a way to replace 9.5 billion or 10 billion ringgit. That's just crazy. But I do have a question for you guys. You know, with regards to the car prices these days, imagine there is no tax. Imagine there are no taxes. What a wonderful world.
You sound like John Lennon.
I strongly believe that the new Perodomo IV is a very good car. It's one of those cars that finally reflects what we are paying, especially with the Proton X70 as well. But if a Mazda 3 came along at 55,000 ringgit, would you guys still buy a Perodomo IV for 50?
You see, Arif, that's a trick question. I mean, because I'm on a Malaysian radio station, of course, I want to support local products. But let's be honest, you know, if you're given the choice between a Mazda or a Toyota and a Perodomo, for me, I'm going to go with the better the devil you know. And we know for a fact that these companies have spent a lot of money on R&D, and they spent a lot of money making sure that their products are good when they roll off the production line. And we know that their after sales is great. Not saying that Perodomo's is not, but I think there are a lot of people who would rather choose Japanese brands over locally produced brands. That's just my opinion. And I noticed Daniel was very quiet there.
I would like to say something. You know, I'm not quiet. I'm just forming a statement. You see, the government cannot do without 9.5 billion ringgit. We know that.
Yeah.
Car taxes, in essence, they collect about 9.5 billion ringgit when things are good. Of course, in this year, they'll probably collect half of that because the car numbers have dropped. My question, which I also posed to the MAA president, was this. You've got two companies who are benefiting from very, very preferential tax system, whereas another 20-odd companies are paying proper taxes, right?
Yeah.
Now, if you help two companies to succeed, you're going to have 20 over companies not succeed in time to come. Out of those 20 over companies, some of them have put up billion-dollar factories, employed thousands of people in their whole chain of production. Now, if you're helping just these two, shouldn't you be helping those who've also spent billions to set up factories and employees and all that? If you put these two local car companies together, their total workforce, and you put the total workforce of the other car companies who are not benefiting from this tax structure, who is the heavier one? So I'm thinking very simple. I'm not an economist. I'm not a government agency. I'm just thinking out like a layman. You still have car taxes. But what you do now is you make the two local companies pay a little bit more tax. You pick the rest, pay a little less tax. You come to a level playing field. This is what I said. So you reduce, say, the total import tax by, say, half, and the incentives you reduce by half, you know? So maybe Perdua and Proton will sell less cars, but the rest will sell more cars. And then you give Malaysians more choice. And then you give Malaysians the ability to pick what they want in their heart, not what they want from their pocket, you see?
Here's another opinion. What about, and this is a stretch, if you were to increase petrol prices and add the tax from the petrol prices rather than, and then be able to reduce car prices? How would we feel about that?
The problem with petrol price, the moment you increase petrol price, the goods and services will all go up. Your kway teow will go up, your mee goreng will go up, your roti canai will go up.
True.
And already we're having problems with that because every time there's a slight change in petrol price, people start panicking and business owners start panicking. Petrol price is not the issue here. The issue here is the tax. Everyone complains about high car prices. So if you put it on a level playing field, less people will complain and people will have more choice. And this is what you want to give to the consumer, more choice. You see, there are so many brands not represented in Malaysia because they look at the unfair system and they say, there's no point coming to Malaysia. Like you say, Alfa Romeo, Fiat, Suzuki. Why are they not in Malaysia? Because they said there's no point opening office, even though we want to sell cars, but with the tax system that's so unbalanced, you know, normally maybe I can sell 1,000 cars a year, but with this unbalanced tax system, I might only sell 20, 30 cars. There's no business case for me to carry on doing business in Malaysia. Mm.
Yeah, I totally agree with all of that. I mean, it's Daniel's suggestion, a little bit off the top and a little bit more on the bottom. That's, I assume, you don't even sacrifice the total industry volume. You don't sacrifice the amount of taxes brought in as well. Yeah. So that seems to make a lot of sense. And even in terms of, you know, the consumer choice, this whole thing limits our access to really good cars. It limits competition. It breeds complacency from the car manufacturers who enjoy a lot more tax breaks than the others.
That's right.
Totally agree. But do you guys want to move on to something a bit more car related, actually?
Yes, please.
So a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about a used car buying guide that dealt with the Mitsubishi Pajero. Yes. And it's now dead.
What?
That's what he said.
Yeah. So apparently this is a part of the small but beautiful Mitsubishi three-year business plan that only focuses on PHEVs and four-wheel drive cars. So I guess they're going to start, what do you call it, skinning, shaving all of the excess fat. So I guess that could mean the goodbye of a Mitsubishi Lancer, maybe?
Probably. No more cars. No more sedans.
And they're only going to focus on what seems to be the developing countries and the developing markets like Africa, Oceania, South America and ASEAN, which they do have a strong following for, but they kind of built that following with the Mitsubishi Pajero, really.
It certainly is.
Yeah, so it's kind of curious. We'll see what happens with Mitsubishi, but shall we move on to some local car launches?
Let's have some of those. Yes, please.
So last Friday, we saw the launch of the BMW X1 S-Drive 18i. This is now the new, cheapest, most affordable BMW on sale today at 208,000 ringgit. This car is basically the X1 20i without the M Sport body kit and is now powered by a 1.5-liter three-cylinder with about 140-ish horsepower. If you kind of compare it to, you know, previously they offered the 118i, which was the most affordable BMW back then, they're moving towards making their SUVs more affordable, which kind of makes sense because everybody's buying SUVs these days, right? They also launched the new BMW M135i xDrive, which is BMW's new front-wheel drive baby BMW. It's going straight for the Mercedes AMG A35. It comes with a 2-liter four-cylinder turbo, 306 horsepower, and 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in 4.8 seconds. As mentioned, because they launched the X1, there is no 118i planned. They said they'll only bring it if there's demand for it, but it seems like probably they're not going to bring it at all.
What kind of price is this going in at?
356,000 ringgit.
Holy moly.
Yeah, but they're saying that, you know, everybody is buying a lot of Mercedes AMGs these days. The A250 is really popular. The A35, you're starting to see a lot of them on the road. So BMW is saying, like, we're going to price it slightly lower than the A35 AMG, but it's a car that's going to be just as good as the other one. Of course, the biggest discussion about this new one series is that it's no longer a unicorn. It's no longer a rear-wheel drive car. Now it's a front-wheel drive car because they say more space. But on paper, you only get 20 liters of extra boot space, which doesn't sound like much. But in terms of passenger room, and there's a huge underfloor storage in the boot as well, that has really improved. And they're saying, like, people don't really want a rear-wheel drive small BMW anymore, despite what we as car enthusiasts believe.
Finally, a Toyota Vios facelift.
Yeah, this is kind of weird to me because I don't know about you, Daniel, because I don't think the Vios needed a facelift.
That's the thing. I also don't, you know, I was surprised to see it because it's not really that pretty.
Oh, why don't you just say what you feel, Daniel?
Well, you know, I'm a very shallow human being. So I think it's not that pretty, number one. Number two, I think because Honda is coming out with an all-new city, Toyota felt that for the region, they needed to do something quickly to make sure they remain fresh with consumers in that segment.
Mm. It's not arrived here yet, right?
No, it was just launched in Philippines. Thailand is coming up very close, and then after that will be the rest of the region.
So if you don't have a picture of the new Vios in front of you, just imagine the new RAV4, the new Fortuner's face, and make it a little bit smaller and stick it on a Vios. That's kind of what it is.
Or to make life easier, you can go to dsf.my and see all the pictures.
Snap. On that note, we're going to take a short break. When we do come back, of course, we'll be talking about the used car buying guide for the Alfa Romeo 159. You're tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined on the phone lines by Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
Hello, my friend.
There he is. And of course, it's the man with the news, Mr. Arif Ruse. Say hello, Arif.
Hello, everybody.
If you're only just joining us, we had some quick fire news at the top of the show. The government approving heavier drink driving penalties. JPJ are offering 70% discount on summonses. Excise duties have got new regulations and a whole bunch of other stuff. But of course, if you're only just tuning in now, we're here for a used car review. And it's all about that wonderful, beautiful thing, the Alfa Romeo 159.
Yeah, I mean, it's an Alfa, and it's, what, 11 years old now, Daniel?
Yeah, about that. The funny thing is, you know, I always say, you know, my used car reviews come from people asking me about a car they want to buy or a car they're interested to buy or they're interested to sell. This time, it was nothing to do with anybody but just myself. Okay?
Mm.
I was just
so
driving.
So this is it's a passion project.
My late parents always told me, always save up for a rainy day. And it's been raining every day. So I think I have to break up my savings. It's a rainy day. So I was driving around some weeks ago and I saw this beautiful, I mean, you know the car I love, right? The Maserati Ghibli, yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And I saw one on the road and I was just admiring it in traffic. And then right behind it, suddenly I noticed an Alfa 159. And then it struck me. I said, you know, I've not seen an Alfa 159 on the road for such a long time because not many were sold in Malaysia. And the grey market and the recon market didn't bring in this car. And when I looked at it, I said, my God, this car still looks so fresh, inviting. And in fact, it looks as inviting as a Maserati because it's an Alfa Romeo, you know?
the commonality is that they're Italian.
Yeah, Italian. And it's just something, you know, just something so inviting about Italian cars. So anyway, so I came back and I did a bit of research. And of course, I was following this Alfa for quite a bit, just admiring its profile and its everything else. And the car was very well maintained. So I came back, I did a bit of research online and I realized that, you know, there's not many for sale because not many were sold. But a few weeks after that, I again went online because I was reminded of Alfa. I thought I'm going to write this article on a used Alfa. And then I suddenly saw two for sale.
Mm.
And when I saw the price, I said, well, it actually makes a lot of sense right now. 11-year-old car at this price. And I'm going to share the price later. But first of all, I'll talk a little bit about the 159. Now, this car was launched by Simon Darby when they were doing Alfa Romeo, when they were the franchise holders in 2009. But this model actually came out in Europe a couple of years earlier. But Simon Darby took some time to bring it in because, again, you know, business case, whether they can sell enough, the tax laws were not favorable. And, you know, you're talking about a car at that time which was going to be priced very close to a German executive sedan, which meant it had more value, more desire, more need in the market. So here comes Alfa trying to compete with this 2-3 established, you know, German and even Swedish sedan that, you know, it's going to be a hard case. But they brought in a few units in 2009. They launched it at 188,000 ringgit.
Sorry, that's a fantastic price.
Fantastic price today, but you know, 11 years ago, that was still a very expensive price. But okay. Then when you looked at the car and said, oh, you know, 188, but when you actually went and touched and felt the car, it's a high-spec model, okay? It carried a 2.2-liter engine and a robotic automatic gearbox. Now, here comes the problem. We actually test drove this car in 2010, and we found that gearbox such a pain. It's slow to respond. It's not precise. It's constantly ticking. It's a gearbox that keeps thinking for you, but it's not thinking the right way, you know?
I remember I visited a workshop a long time ago, and I saw this 159 as well. Exactly in the pictures, it's gray and fantastic looking and all that stuff. And I asked the mechanic, why was it there? And the mechanic said, oh, yeah, the owner wants to do a manual swap with it.
Right. So that's the best part. So a couple of years after that, I was in Singapore visiting a relative, and one of my relatives actually bought a 159 wagon.
Ooh.
In Singapore, because in Singapore you have a whole variety of cars because they have a fair car tax system. So he had bought a 159 wagon, 2.2 manual. So I asked him, I said, can I please take it for a little bit of a test drive? He said, sure, let's go for a test drive. And it was late in the evening, and it was not a very crowded part of Singapore. And I tell you, that manual gearbox was a dream. Smooth, slick, precise. It worked so well with the 2.2 engine. And suddenly, even though the car only had 185 horses and 230 newton meters of torque, but with that manual gearbox and that, you know, that raspy note, you felt like you're going faster. You felt like you're in something more powerful. And that's what Alfa delivers when they have everything working for you. That means you work with the car. You're a driver. Automatic gearbox in an Alfa never works. Never, ever works. It never worked even in older Alfas. So I thought to myself, this is what I needed in Malaysia. But of course, in Malaysia, they didn't have the manual version. So I said, never mind, forget about it. I'll never look at this car. But now comes second-hand values. So this car competed directly with the BMW 3 Series of that time, the Mercedes C-Class, the Audi A4. Today, if you take 11-year-old 3 Series C-Class and an Audi A4, they are going for about the same price as this Alfa 159. That is shocking, right?
Yeah.
You would have thought the Alfa 159 would have plummeted in price. But listen, the Germans have also plummeted. Okay?
Yeah, I can vouch for that.
Yeah. So there's really no difference in the ownership of this car. The only difference is, can you live with that robotic gearbox? That's another issue. Hmm. So we looked at the two cars for sale. One was going for about 30,000. The low 30s. One was going for the high 30s. Now, the one that was going for the high 30s was a one-owner car, full maintenance history given, and the car was totally accident-free. The one that was just above 30, we didn't manage to examine the car. We just saw the pictures online. We called the dealer. It was a used car dealer. We spoke to the dealer. Of course, he confidently said, king of car, best quality, no problem. I guarantee everything okay. Maintenance, the owner is non-smoker. The owner is VVIP. That's all that says every single used car sold.
Yes.
So I thought to myself, if I'm buying this car, I'll actually go and see the one with the owner selling. You can meet the guy, see where he lives, understand how he looks after the car. If there's anything wrong, you can go back to his house and throw red paint, you know?
What?
Because you went to his house, but owner operated. So, no, I'm not going to throw red paint. But what I'm saying is, it's always better to buy from someone that you can meet, talk to the person, see whether he's passionate about his car. If you go to someone's house and you see they've got other cars there and they're all well looked after, you know that this guy is genuine about selling his car, you know?
I'd say, especially when you're dealing with a car like an Alfa, because yes, spare parts might be an issue, but
they're definitely going to be an issue.
Actually, not a very big issue. You can get all the parts,
but it's probably going to cost a lot of time and effort, I think.
Actually, with online now, I mean, I was checking with some Alfa owners. It's not difficult to get the parts online. And there's a few workshops here that actually sell a lot of used Alfa parts from scrapped Alphas from Europe and Japan. So getting parts is really not an issue unless you're going for the very unusual models. And this model wasn't very unusual. It's quite a common model.
Yeah, which was the point of which I was getting to, which was, Malaysians seem to love the Alfa Romeos a lot. Yes. And you don't see them a lot, but I've seen so many Alfa Romeo specialists. I've seen a lot of people, lot of family members and friends with Alfa Romeos, and they all seem to love it despite actually not driving them a lot.
the thing is, it's a very sweet spot here. You want to own an Alfa, but you don't want to drive it too much because you're scared it'll give you problems, you know? So you only drive, it's like a weekend warrior car, but that's why they're all very low mileage, they're all well looked after if you find the right one. But of course, the creme de la creme Alpha 159 will have to be the 3.2 JTS V6, which also comes in a manual.
Yeah.
Now, I've been told by the person who I saw this car, he said, actually, there's one guy in Malaysia who converted his car to a 3.2 JTS V6, which is possible to do because it's the same body shell. Now, that will be the Alpha 159-200.
Yeah, I totally agree. You mentioned in the article that the car is kind of heavy and most of these Alphas come in as front-wheel drive, which with Alphas is not truly a bad thing because the chassis is super balanced.
Exactly.
And steering is fantastic. But, you know, you put in a 3.2 liter V6 with 250-odd horsepower in the car and a manual gearbox. Oh, that's just...
It's lovely. It's lovely. And that engine sound, even with the 2.2, it sounds so exciting. It sounds... It's telling you, drive me, drive me, drive me. You know, it's a go, you know? And you know, when you take an Alpha into the high revs, you know, like Japanese cars, German cars, as you go into the higher revs, they sound like, slow down, slow down. But the Alphas will say, hey, come on, faster, you know?
In an Italian accent.
Of course, of course, of course.
Of course. Yes. I've always loved the look of Alphas, you know?
Yes, timeless.
Yeah, the simplicity of the design, the wonderful curves that they've got, and, you know, there's not too much going off. And that, I think, it's like a metallic, wonderful sculpture.
Yes.
But like Arif has said, it's always been one of those cars I've kind of looked at and heard about, but never really known anybody that's owned one or, in fact, driven one. It's just right. been one of those cars that you kind of admire from afar.
Correct.
But, yeah.
But, you know, after watching James Bond's Quantum of Solace, you know, those black Alphas were racing around.
Yeah.
And then you said to yourself, whoa, now this we can do, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the thing about like these Alphas, right? They made an appearance in, what's that, Rowan Atkinson other movie? One of those Rowan Atkinson
movies. Yes, yes. The one he went traveling. Yes, yes.
Yes, these Alphas are always kind of portrayed the baddies, but the baddies that you can sort of get with.
Yes.
They're not like the truly baddies. They're the cool guys who just happen to be chasing James Bond in his Aston Martin and keeps up.
Yeah, and I'm sure when they were shooting that movie, they had to do at least about 7 takes because one of those Alphas would have broken down or, you know, would have had a sticky gear change. And say, okay, back to square one and roll.
Yeah.
But at all the time, you can see the drivers, they had a smile on their face. They were happy driving those Alphas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just reading a review of a Malaysian owner who bought an Alpha 159. It's the 2.2, and he bought it in 2010. And he wrote the review in 2017. And he was saying, like, I mean, exactly what you said. This is the car that you buy with your heart.
Yes.
And even though he could find the parts, they were a bit expensive, but what car isn't these days? But he was saying, like, it's kind of temperamental. One day he was driving a long distance journey and then suddenly the car decided to overheat. So he stopped by the side of the road, waited a few minutes, you know, pampered it a little bit. It's okay. There. Added a bit of water and then everything was fine again. So then he went to the workshop and then he asked, what's the issue? Apparently some of the plastic hoses and the pipes were cracked and it's leaking in a few places. But because of the way this the cooling system was built, you could not just replace the hose. You had to replace a few things with it because the hose was connected to a much bigger thing, which meant that you had to buy the much bigger thing to replace the whole cooling system, which is, you know, it's kind of weird, but that's what you get when you drive, I would say, a bespoke car like an Alfa Romeo.
Quirky engineering.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, there we go then. Are we wrapped up with that?
Yes, and so I'd like to end by saying this. You know, if you love a Maserati Ghibli and you know it's still too expensive, buy an Alfa Romeo 159 and live with it for a few years. You'll not lose a lot of money and then you buy the Maserati Ghibli.
before that, I think I just want to add, I think the interior of the car, it was one of the first few cars to have actually, around the center console, it was fully aluminium. And then they had this around the speedometer and everything, it was fully aluminium. The car was designed specifically with the driver in mind. The dashboard was angled directly to you. Everything about it just screamed I'm meant to be driven.
Yes. Large, clear dials, you know, not this fancy digital stuff that gets distracted in the sun and everything else, you know?
Yeah, it's fantastic looking car even today. I mean, the interior hasn't aged that much, I don't think. Yeah.
Oh, listening to you two talking about it like it's your first child.
Two little boys loving their little alpha.
It's so sweet. Time to wrap up and get back to reality.
Yes,
come on.
Yes, we have to do that.
Just to balance it out, this is the car you buy with your heart again. I mean, if you're not prepared to love this, don't. Yeah. Just don't.
All right, ladies and gents, you have been listening to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM, of course. We had some news clips, some news bites for you at the top of the show. And if you missed all of that, don't forget to download the podcast and listen back however you normally would, whether it's via the app or however you listen to your podcast. And then, of course, we had the used car buying guide for the Alfa Romeo 159. My name is Rich Bradbury. On behalf of Arif Ruse and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my, we'll be back same time, same place here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to BFM.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.